this is Your Flames Are Flames That Kiss Me Dead, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Five Centuries Verse and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairing Steve Harrington, Eddie Munson, with additional tags for POV, Steve Harrington. 5-in-1 things. Recreational drug use. Zaza kissing. First kiss. Cheek kisses. Robin Buckley and Steve Harrington are best friends. The party plays Dungeons and Dragons. Steve Harrington is whipped. Eddie Munson has a crush on Steve Harrington. Not canon compliant. I just let everyone live. Why not? Fluff and humor. Wingman Robin Buckley. Decidedly non-serious. Steve Harrington and Eddie Munson acting as the party's parental figures. Summary. 5 times someone, mostly Eddie, kisses Steve, and 1 time Steve kisses Eddie. One. Eddie keeps touching him. It's kind of weird in the way Eddie always is. Steve isn't really used to people who aren't Robin, his hookup of the month, or the kids touching him. And the kids, normally only when they're being rowdy, making Steve lift them on his shoulders so they can reach things they probably shouldn't, making him play basketball so Lucas can prove he's better than Steve ever was, or when Steve gets his own back and musses their hair and pretends to clean their faces with a bit of wet tissue like he's their mom. When Robin started touching him, it had kind of escaped Steve's notice. One day they were co-workers, and then the next Robin had her arms around his shoulders, and he only kind of stopped to think about it 6 months in, when he was sitting on a kitchen chair with his arms wrapped around Robin's waist, face tucked into the curve of her hip, and her hands in his hair, and several scandalized eyes watching them like they were debauching each other in the middle of the buyer's potluck. When Eddie starts touching him, after Vecna has said, hasta la vista, baby, and life has gone back to having nightmares instead of being a nightmare, it's a different story. The first night, it's just Eddie's forehead banging down on Steve's shoulder, and Steve patting him sort of commiseratingly on the shoulder because, yeah, first time, dude. And also, we have matching bat mauling, so... And then they both end up at the hospital together with some weird agent guy who won't take off his sunglasses. Seriously, Eddie is saying, shoulder pressing into Steve's as they wait for someone to tell them they haven't got bat rabies or superpowers from underworld slime or the lung cancer or whatever the fuck you get from breathing in all the ash and spores down there. Steve distinctly remembers back when demodogs were a thing and Billy Hargrove's fists were sort of bound to end up punching Steve through the ground at any point, that masks and protective clothing had been sort of a big deal, but apparently everyone's kind of over that now and it looks silly, like how Lucas forgoes wearing a coat when it rains because he's a man grown now, Steve. It's the middle of the night. And he's in a hospital. Can't he take those off? But the mystique, Steve says. He's only half listening to Eddie ramble on about sunglasses-wearing agent guys, because the kids have been taken to a different ward to get looked at, and he's sort of missing their grubby faces in a very non-parental way. You know. Normally. He's missing them normally. And also, Robin is behind one of these doors getting the burns on her hands seen to. Steve doesn't know why he trusted her to throw or even touch anything with an open flame. And he is missing her in a deeply non-codependent way. I didn't know you knew words like mystique, says Eddie. Steve hums. That's part of my mystique. He snorts, and his arm seems to press further into Steve's, which Steve only notices because it's sort of uncomfortable on his bites. Right. The mystery of Steve Harrington, says Eddie, with that half-joking, half-not dramatic tone of his, narrowing his eyes on the side of Steve's face.
"Where the fuck is Robin?"
Steve mutters, glaring down the white, buzzing corridor of the hospital.
"You think Sunglasses Guy will know?"
Eddie shrugs and stops leaning on him.
"I don't know, maybe."
Steve sighs, kicking his feet, scuffing the toes of his sneakers on the linoleum.
"Does your uncle even know where you are? Wait, your house is kind of a demon portal right now. They'll probably set you up in a shitty little motel, government funding and all."
He sighs too and leans back in the chair. His hair is very dirty and sort of singed. Steve didn't think he was anywhere near the fire shit Robin was doing. Although it could be that Robin is just that bad at throwing fiery stuff at interdimensional mind wizards.
Guess so. Maybe I could get Henderson to let me sleep on his floor.
You can come sleep on my floor,
Steve says, without really thinking.
Or like, I have a couch and a guest room, but it doesn't have sheets.
Eddie is staring at him.
I don't really give a shit if you have sheets, Harrington. It's either sleepover at Dusty Buns when his mom probably thinks I just murdered some kids, or I get to sleep in your mansion.
He scoffs.
Hardly a mansion.
He almost regrets inviting Eddie, if not for the fact he looks sad and self-loathing and all those fun emotions when he mentions what happened to Chrissy and the other two who had died. God, that's shit. Steve doesn't even remember their names. He wakes up the next morning with Robin's head under his chin and her bandaged fingers wound in his shirt. He'd been too exhausted to dream, and he lies there, wondering what time it is. The part that sucks most about the aftermath of these things, or, okay, probably not the worst part, but the most irritating, definitely, is the fucking jet lag. You sleep off full days and then have to fight to get back to not being nocturnal while battling nightmares and paranoia about sleeping through the dark to get there. Robin under his chin is fairly normal, all in all, as is the way he feels warm and comfortable with the weight of her on his chest.
Eventually, he gets hungry enough. Days of eating what children call emergency rations, and others might call chips, crackers, and soda, get you to a point where only eggs and whole wheat bread are going to see you right.
Then he slides out from under her, tucking her hair behind her ear as he goes, and limps out of his room. The house is quiet, but Steve takes his time, letting his eyes scour every crack in the plaster for hints of goo, and listening out for weird sounds. By the time he gets down the stairs, he's at least partly convinced that his parents' home hasn't become a womb for weird, slimy aliens, and he slides to a stop on his socked feet on the wooden hall floor to stare at the shape on the couch. He'd half forgotten he'd invited Munson. The shape is breathing, thankfully. The night before, the poor guy hadn't even been able to make it to the mattress he'd been raving about and had conked out in the living room after about 3 seconds of sitting in one of the armchairs.
"Morning," says the lump unexpectedly. "Think it's probably afternoon, actually."
His voice feels very scratchy and worn from screaming, yelling, being strangled by the upside-down variety of Bat, and singing very loudly and badly Love Machine by Wham, because everyone else had refused point-blank to sing Steve's favorite song with him. The lump of Eddie Munson under the blanket Steve had managed to find last night groans.
"Fuck me. Where's Robin?"
"Upstairs, still asleep.
You want..." "Shit. Is it breakfast? Lunch? Dinner? Meal?"
he finishes lamely. Eddie snorts.
Meal sounds amazing,
he says.
Thanks. Luckily, his eggs and bread are still in date, and he has a packet of instant mashed potato in one of his cupboards, which probably nobody has ever referred to as a godsend. But Steve thinks if he doesn't consume a potato right now, though he thinks he could probably debate the amount of actual potato in instant mash with a scholar of the great carbohydrate, he'll fucking die. The end result is three plates brimming with toast, eggs. They were so close to going out of date, he just sort of cracked all of them into the pan. And something that could pass for a potato if you squint. It's probably, from any sane person's perspective, not the kind of meal worth a kiss. For some reason, Eddie kisses Steve's cheek anyway, brief and chaste, and with an over-exaggerated mwah, before he grabs the plate with the most toast on it and slumps down on the kitchen island. Steve stares at him for a long moment, before his Robin senses start tingling, and he turns around to see her looking at him with a speculative sort of expression. I made a meal, Steve says, brandishing another plate of instant mash, toast, and eggs at her. She nods, shakes her head like she's clearing it, and comes to grab a plate herself. Steve can sort of feel the kiss, the slight burr of stubble, and the warm, dry, chapped lips. On his cheek, the whole of the Breck lunch-inner, until Robin's parents and Eddie's uncle come and pick them up. It's weird. It's a weird Eddie thing. It's probably never going to happen again. Two. Which is to say, of course it fucking does. They're debriefing, according to the kids. To Steve, it feels more like a hangout with the occasional, dude, remember when that totally traumatic thing happened? In hindsight, kind of fucking epic. Dustin and Mike are playing Mario. Will is currently telling them about a bath of salts. Not to compare wounds or whatever, but Steve wishes he'd been dealing with that instead. Max and Lucas are watching the Mario gameplay with expressions that tell Steve Dustin and Mike are doing terrible, even though he knows nothing about the game. Elle is nodding along to Will's story, with a sort of grim expression that lets Steve know he'd rather be filling a bath with salts, but he wouldn't rather be doing whatever Elle was doing in said bath. Nancy and Jonathan are trying to pretend like they wouldn't rather be canoodling somewhere. Eddie, sitting by Steve's legs next to the couch, is looking closer and closer to calling the salt bath mind battle totally metal. Argyle has already called it rad. Robin is falling asleep on Steve's shoulder.
Why are they playing that?
She mumbles.
It's too loud. It's nap time.
It's debrief time, he reminds her.
It's more like a highlights reel,
she says.
Maybe we should start a newsletter.
He snorts. This week in hell. One of us should start an Ask Agatha. I'd totally write in. He rubs her shoulder.
Like one of these dipshits has any advice to give you. Hey!
Dustin somehow hits Steve on the shin from where he's sitting on the floor and almost dies on screen, if Mike's triumphant laugh is anything to go by.
Ow, dude, says Steve. I still have shin splints from running barefoot around Slimy Hawkins. Don't do that.
Eddie kisses Steve's shin through his jeans.
Poor Stevie.
Steve is thinking about how kisses feel when they're not kept from your bare skin by jeans. Robin is looking at him with eyes so narrowed he thinks it must be painful. He can practically see her brain whirring, feel it overheating on his shoulder.
Shut up, he hisses at her, and he feels her grinning as she tucks herself back under his arm. Three. Three's like a good number, right? It'll stop after three. Good things come in threes, after all. Not that it's a good thing, or a thing at all. It's just Eddie being weird and being Eddie. That's it. Hellfire is being hosted at his house. Steve doesn't remember quite when he agreed to this happening. Except one moment, his home was nerd-free, except for pool parties. And now there's a standing appointment with his dining room table that requires soda and snacks. And at least 2 or 3 hours. God, Steve. You're letting him in, Robin had told him sagely. And soon he will infect everything. Steve's starting to think she's right as he comes into the dining room with a plate of little sandwiches. Yes, the man has him making little sandwiches. What of it? And sees the amount of props that have somehow wheedled their way into Steve's home. It looks like some warlord from one of those really shitty fantasy books Mike reads has somehow fallen out ass first into the dining room of the Harringtons. Steve can only sigh and walk away. Some things are better left for nerds to deal with, and normal people like himself to ignore until they become an actual problem for him. It's not like he was using the dining room anyway. Even from the kitchen, where he's making mac and cheese and trying to stop himself from making enough portions to feed all the kids, he can hear Eddie's drama voice. It's mellower than his normal talking voice, deeper when things get scary, croaky when this weird wizard guy pops up and Eddie needs to read his lines or whatever, or sing-songy when this lady elf starts rebuffing all of Mike's attempts to flirt with her and use dice to woo her. God, they're all nerds. Lucas is laughing and saying, dude, how did you ever get L? And Mike is protesting that it's only because the lady elf is slightly too old for him and just being noble. To which Lucas says, to protect your virtue, Mikey, which has them all giggling. Steve smiles, shaking his head as he pokes at the sauce with his wooden spoon. Just then, you all hear a strange noise coming from the glowing crystal, says Eddie, his voice back to that mellow and deep tone, and Steve can just imagine him waving his hands mysteriously and slouching back in his throne. Steve hears him cackle. No, come on, shouts Erica. Just a little bit longer, Mike says. Sorry, kids, says Eddie. We'll pick back up next time Harrington gives us leave to use his magnificent hall. Gotta leave you wanting more, don't I? Steve turns off the hob and swings his kitchen towel over his shoulder. Come on, pack up. Munson is tired of reading for you shits. He claps his hands together. Come on, get your shoes on. Yes, Mom, says Mike. You and Dad are being really boring today. Incredibly boring, Lucas stresses. We have time for more. Would you rather we end mid-conversation or fight when Harrington kicks us out into the dark, unforgiving night? Asks Eddie. There's a chorus of groans and yes and no's, and a maybe would be a lot less lame than this from Erica. Talking of the dark and unforgiving night, says Steve, following them into the hall. How are you all getting home? I've got the van. Don't worry your pretty little head about it, Harrington. Steve swats at him with a tea towel with a scowl. Ooh, trouble in paradise, Will mutters. California has taught him bad and awful things, Steve thinks. They're going to get divorced, Lucas pretends to sob into Dustin's shoulder.
Shut up, says Steve.
Maybe I just won't let you host here again. And that will be the end of the elf chick. And the croaky frog-sounding wizard will never rematerialize again.
My wizard voice did not sound like a frog, Eddie protests.
Of course not, Steve grins.
Honey,
he adds as an afterthought. Eddie squints at him and then darts forward to kiss him on the cheek. It feels the same as before, only less chapped.
Thanks, honey bear. Come on, kids.
Eddie starts ushering them toward the front door.
Mommy Steve is getting cranky and needs to eat his din-dins.
The kids are still whining and looking between Steve and Eddie like they're a puzzle to rival even the most mysterious of Hawkins' small-town deaths when the front door closes, and Steve finds himself alone in the hallway, trying to work out where Eddie Weird stops and where just plain fucking odd begins. Four.
You know, Steve says, I kind of get why the guy kept on talking about it.
Argyle had, before he left for California, distributed most of his palm surfer dude whatever weed to the teens of Hawkins. Everything that Mike had managed to sneak out of the pizza van had been confiscated already. After spending most of the fortnight he spent there, waxing lyrical about its healing powers.
Same, says Eddie. It's like, good. Better than the stuff you used to sell.
Eddie elbows him.
Shut up.
They're sitting on the roof of the apartment building in town that the government offered Eddie by way of, sorry, we thought you were somehow murdering people by snapping every single one of their bones. Like, uber sorry, dude. The night sky is pretty clear, and Hawkins is quiet except for the occasional car rumbling up the road and a dog barking a few streets away.
As peaceful as a place you know harbors interdimensional portals can get, anyway.
The deck chairs left up here by whichever pothead came before them are comfy enough, and Steve thinks he could stay up here forever. He's bummed Robin couldn't come too.
He loves getting high with Robin.
Steve, says Eddie.
Yes, Edward? Edward? Yeah?
Eddie giggles.
Wait, I forgot what I was gonna say. Can't have been that important then. It was very important,
he says morosely.
I miss Robin. She always remembers what she was gonna say. No, she does not.
Steve laughs.
She does. Does not. Argyle's weed is very good. Steve almost wishes he'd taken up the guy's invitation to go mushroom hunting. So what that couldn't have been like. Wait, I remembered.
Then Steve has a lap full of Eddie. And it seems Eddie didn't have so much to say as do. Which might be why he found it hard to remember. None of this train of thought is, of course, as important as the fact Eddie is kissing him.
Robin is gonna get a kick out of this, he thinks distinctly.
The mouth is warm on his, and his lap is warm, and his shoulders where Eddie is holding him are burning. He can't stop giggling into the kiss, even when Eddie tugs on his hair and makes a displeased noise. Eddie pulls off, finally, and frowns out into the dark night.
Wait. No, that wasn't it. That sets Steve off again, and he can't stop laughing until Eddie gets him to stand up and drags him over to the roof edge to look at the constellations.
He forgets, mostly, about the kiss, except his lips are tingling, and he feels warm all over.
And every time he looks at Eddie, he can't help but want. Five. Robin does, of course, find it hilarious.
And then he said that's not what he even forgot,
she says again, laughing. She's already asked him to retell the story twice, and Steve thinks that this story is probably, with a few gender-related points altered, going to end up in his best man speech from her. Or, like, wife speech, if they do those. And if Steve can convince her that getting married would be totally fucking metal, and rad, and cool.
So, I guess I don't know if he meant to kiss me at all, Steve says again.
He definitely did. Probably just got put off over the fact you were laughing while it happened. He pulls a face at her. Whatever. Seriously, Steve, that boy has been all over you since the untimely death of our favorite slimy tentacly wizard dude with the mains electric wiring to the upside down.
You're hopeless, she says with an air of finality.
Suck this hopeless dick.
They end up wrestling on the sofa until Queen's Somebody to Love comes on, and they have to leap into the air and turn Steve's living room into an impromptu dance floor because this is their fucking song. When she leaves, she smacks kisses all over his face like she's marking her fucking territory.
She might be, for all he knows. She can get kind of jealous.
But all Steve really notices is that she most definitely does not have stubble, and her lips are tacky with lip gloss, not dry like Eddie's. She pulls away and grabs his chin to pull his face down level with hers. Don't be an idiot, Steve Harrington.
What?
Just don't. Be happy. Do happy things with your weird co-parent or whatever.
We're not.
She rolls her eyes.
Steve.
Roberta.
Sven. Just be good and do what I would do.
Don't kiss any men. Got it.
She pinches his chin lightly and smacks one last kiss to his cheek. She smells like flowers and Steve's shampoo. Steve couldn't tell you what Eddie smells like, but it definitely isn't flowers. Don't be an idiot, she says softly. I love you.
I love you.
She wags a warning finger at him.
Nothing stupid.
He salutes her as she goes out the door, partly wondering why she's allowed to go goo around Vicky and drop things like she's in a cartoon. Vicky, who definitely likes her back, when he is not allowed to do anything stupid at all. And one.
You are here,
says Eddie, which is one of the most stupid sentences that's ever been said to Steve. And he's been hanging around with the kids for so long he actually thinks he's getting stupider, which should have been impossible.
It does look that way.
He thinks Robin should have probably issued a warning of no stupidity to Eddie, too.
Can I come in?
Eddie pokes his head out of the apartment door, looks up and down, and then lets him inside.
Dude, I'm not here for drugs, says Steve. What's with all the sneaking around?
He shrugs a little shiftily.
Just wondering what you're doing here if you're not being chased by a slathering beast of unknown origins.
Steve frowns.
Well, we're friends, right? We hang out?
Sure, Eddie allows.
We co-parent the kids together, if that's what you want to call it.
It is.
Steve looks around the apartment.
Nice decor.
Eddie doesn't look impressed.
You also kissed me. That's one point in the being friends column.
He snorts.
Is it?
I'm sure in some cultures, Steve starts to say, and then realizes he actually doesn't know where he was going with it, and shuts up.
So, you want to pretend it was just a weird friend thing and forget about it?
Steve dithers. This feels like one of the idiotic things Robin told him he shouldn't do.
No.
A narrowing of dark eyes in his direction.
You look a lot like Nancy when you do that. Bringing up his ex might be another one of those.
And he gapes at him.
Right. Well, this has been a stimulating conversation, Harrington. But if you don't mind...
He presses a hand to Steve's chest to start pushing him out of the apartment.
He grabs at his wrist. Wait, no, just...
Steve leans forward and kisses Eddie.
There's a moment where nothing happens. Just those dry, warm lips against his, and Eddie's big, warm body frozen underneath his touch. And everything seems very hot and confusing, and then Eddie is moving back against him, gentle at first, and then with the same enthusiasm of the night on the roof, not near as half-chased as the kisses to Steve's cheek he has been giving at the slightest provocation.
For the good of the kids, Steve says, leaning away a little and panting.
It should be good for you to know that I don't plan on divorcing you anytime soon.
Eddie stares at him, and then starts grinning.
You're so weird. Gareth never believes me that you're secretly a weirdo.
Privately, Steve thinks everyone is a bit of a weirdo, but that will probably make Eddie and the rest of the nerd band feel less special, so he keeps his mouth shut on that point.
So, like, boyfriends?
That seems like the kind of thing Robin would deem acceptable.
This has to be a fever dream.
If he said,
"Oh, this is no dream, baby," Eddie and Robin would never speak to him again. So, he doesn't. But it's a very close thing. As if he knows, Eddie presses a finger to Steve's mouth to shut him up and says,
"Yeah, all right, Harrington." He shakes his head like this is the kind of thing that can be shaken free like cobweb dreams.
Okay.
Steve grins at him.
Good.
He blinks.
Steve doesn't know how blinking can be cute, but Eddie manages it.
Steve kisses him again. And thanks God for putting Robin Buckley on the same work schedule as him at Scoops fucking Ahoy.
That's good,
he mumbles into the next kiss, and hopes that nothing ever gets in the way of doing this, like, ever.
The end.
Author's notes. Title from The Caterpillar. By The Cure.
IDK why Steve has such a Stiles Dolinsky voice in this, but whatever. Hope you enjoyed.
Reader's notes. This podfic was recorded as a gift for Reformed Sunday as part of Summer Podfic Swamp 2024.
I spent a lot of time creeping through your Tumblr rec lists, and we had a lot of things that overlapped, and then I saw this one that I hadn't actually read by Five Centuries Verse, and I didn't even know that there were Five Centuries Verse fics that I hadn't read yet. So, yeah, I jumped straight on this one. Thank you for recommending this to me. Thank you to the mods of Summer Podfic Swap for making this gift exchange happen again. If you're listening to this somewhere down the line, check out that whole collection. There are a lot of, you know, podfic gifts that are then, you know, a gift for the whole community. So check that out. Take a listen. And I just thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.